Really, really cool. So today I'm going to tell you something about the Gunishi multiplet as strong coupling. So this is a work based on this paper appeared on the archive like a month ago or so. And this has been done in collaboration with Breno Carlini Vallillo, who's in Chile, in Santiago de Chile. Okay, so what I want to talk about is I want to tell you something about anomalous dimensions. So the subject of the talk will be anomalous dimensions of gauge invariant local operators. Local operators. Let's say O of X in four-dimensional gauge theories. And in particular, I will consider N equals 4 supremials theory, which is everybody's favorite theory. And to have in mind a particular gauge invariant local operators that I'll be very interested in is the Konishi operator, which is trace of phi I of x, where phi i's are the six scalars of n equals 4 supremials. In particular, I would be interested in the whole Konishi multiplet, which is a multiplet that you obtain by, it's a super multiplet of n equals 4 supremials that you obtain by acting with supercharges on this, high space state. So, okay, so I'll give first a very long motivation and review of existing results, and then I get to the plan of the talk after like 5 minutes. And so since this is like a Blackboard talk, so please interrupt me at any point and ask any questions, and we can discuss everything. So the idea here is that we have a four-dimensional conformal field theory in which the global symmetry group, which is in this case ESU 2,2/4, contains the dilatation generator, which I will call D. And we will study the eigenvalues of these dilatation operators, which are called conformal dimensions. So a conformal dimension is defined in this way. Okay, so take the commutator of D with an operator O of X, sub delta, this is like I delta O of X. So what we're going to study in the rest of the talk is how to compute these objects, which I call conformal dimensions, in different limits of the theory. Okay, so these quantities are very important because knowing all of the conformal dimensions means that you basically solved the two-point function sector of the theory. Since when you compute OPEs in this conformal field theory, this is how the OPEs behave, and these deltas here are the same as the deltas here. So once we solve for all of the conformal dimensions of all of our gauge invariant local operators, we solve for all of the two-point functions of the theory, which is the first thing you want to do in a conformal field theory. Okay, so what is known about these conformal dimensions in N equals 4 supremials? I'll give a very brief review of the state of the art. Okay, so what do we know about I mean, even if there are super experts in the audience, maybe for everybody else, I will just say a few things. So we're going to be in the planar limit, and I'll tell you in 1 second what this is. So in N equals 4 supremials, we can take gauge invariant local operators And they will have a classical dimension, so a classical level when the coupling is zero. Delta is equal to delta zero, which is called the engineering dimension. Which is just given by the free field dimension of the operator. In this case, it's 2, for instance. But then, as soon as we turn on a coupling, so what's the coupling here? The coupling that we are going to consider is the Toff coupling, which is G Yamil's square times the number of colors in the planar limit where G Yamil goes to 0 and goes to infinity. And we can dial lambda as we like. So in the quantum theory, as soon as we turn on a coupling, what happens is that the conformal dimension gets quantum corrections. So how do these quantum corrections look like? So let's introduce a quantity which we call gamma, which is delta minus delta zero, and this is going to be is going to include all of the quantum corrections to this classical engineering dimension. So this is what we call anomalous dimension. Anomalous dimension. Okay. So the first case is the weak coupling regime, where lambda, the Toff coupling, is very, very small. So we are in the perturbative regime of the gauge theory. We can do loop computations, as usual, with Feynman diagrams, blah, blah, blah. And we see that gamma, the anomalous dimension, has a perturbative expansion, which is like a number C1 times lambda plus a number C2 times lambda squared plus blah, 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 blah. This is like the one loop, the two loop, and so on. So this is like in general, except for protected operators in which this is going to be zero. Okay, plus quantum higher loop corrections. Okay, then there is another regime of the gauge theory, the strong coupling regime. So strong coupling, so this is weak. Weak coupling. And okay, so then there's the strong coupling regime. In which lambda is much, much bigger than one. Okay, so it's lambda going to infinity. So in this case, we know something about the spectrum. So let me, since I had so many blackboards, okay, let me go here. So in this case, lambda, this is from there, lambda much, much bigger than one. We have, okay, gamma equals zero for BPS operators. So BPS operators are protected, so they don't have any quantum corrections at weak coupling. They don't have any quantum corrections at strong coupling. Then there's another sector of the theory in which gamma goes like lambda to the 1/4. And this is the sector of short non-BPS operators, like, for instance, the Konishi multiplet, and so on. And then there's a sector of semi-classical, a very large, let's say, large non-BPS operator that have even larger anomalous dimension. Okay, so how can we study these things, the anomalous dimension, the operators at strong coupling? So from the field theory point of view, it's kind of hopeless, because what you're going to do? It's infinite coupling. But thanks to string theory, we know how to do this. So to actually compute these quantities at strong coupling, one makes use of the ADS-CFT duality. So what is the ADS-CFT duality? Okay, let me just summarize in like half a blackboard. So n equals 4 super Yamils, super Yamils theory in 4 dimensions, is equivalent to type 2B string theory on ADS5 times S5 background. And we use this duality in order to compute this, these quantities in the following way. So there is an ADS-CFT dictionary. So this is ADS-CFT dictionary. The ADS-CFT dictionary tells you that the square root of the Toff coupling is equal to the radius squared divided by alpha prime on the string theory side. So this means, in particular, that when lambda is very, very large, so the strong coupling regime that I was talking about here, the radius over alpha prime is very, very large. In units of the string tension, is really, really large. But when the radius of this background is very, very large, we are in the regime in which we can use perturbative string theory on this side. So if we want to study strongly coupled physics in n equals 4 supremum mills, we're going to use weakly coupled perturbative string theory on this side. So that's what we're going to use. So this means that we can use perturbative string theory. String theory, by this I mean that we are expanding string theory in this background in the near flat space, in the near flat space limit. Okay. So in particular, the ADS-CFT dictionary tells me that the quantities I'm interested in, which are these conformal dimensions, these things I just told you, are equal to the energies of the string, energies of strings propagating in this ADS5 tensor 5 background. So if we want to solve this problem of computing the normal dimension of gauge invariant local operators at strong coupling, this is completely equivalent to computing the energies of perturbative strings in an ADS5 tensor 5 background with very large radius. So this is what I'm going to compute in the rest of the talk. So what's the state of the art? Well, the state of the art is that Pedro and his collaborators, using integrability, before telling you the state of the art, so let me go back a second to this blackboard here. This blackboard, yes, well, whatever. So let's match a little bit. Let's have a little bit more of a dictionary between these operators and the string side. So on the string side, so this is supremum mills. On the string side, we have to kind of understand what we're going to compute. So the BPS sector of n equals 4 supremum mills, in which there's no normal dimension, this corresponds to the supergravity state, the supergravity sector of string theory, which is called, what is called on the worksheet, the sector of massless vertex operators. So the energies of the massless sector of the string theory, the energies are of order 1. There's no anomalous dimension. This sector, which is the sector we are interested in for these short local operators, are dual to the what you would call the massive string spectrum. Just as you would do in flat 10 dimension, you have the various levels, and this is going to be dual to the massive string spectrum. And then this sector of very large of operators with an asymptotically large number of elementary fields in it is dual to the sector of strings which are solitonic strings, which means they are like strings with very large quantum numbers. For instance, like macroscopic strings extending whose worksheets extends in the ADS, or like PP wave strings that rotate really, really, really fast on the equator of S5. So this is the sort of. So what we're going to be interested in is this sector of the theory that has not been studied so far. So this is like a new sector of ADS-CFT. So what's the state of the art for this correspondence? Yeah, so Pedro and collaborators wrote down a system of equation, which is called the Y system, by Pedro et al. And using integrability, they derived this system of equation. And what they did is that they conjectured to solve for all of the anomalous dimensions of all of the operators in the theory at any value of the coupling. So all anomalous dimensions at any coupling. So this is like a crazy, incredible achievement. And what are the checks of this conjectured Y system? Well, at weak coupling, what they did is that they reproduced all of the known results about perturbation theory and Eagles-Forss severe meals, including the tricky, the notorious wrapping interactions, which I'm not going to talk about. So at weak coupling, it's fine. Okay. And at strong coupling, they reproduced all the sector of semi-classical strings, which is the sector in which we have very large non-BPS operators in the field theory side, and strings with very large quantum numbers. The solitonics sector. So what we're going to do here is we're going to compute using, from first principles, just regular quantization of string theory, we're going to provide a method to compute the remaining part of the spectrum, which is the massive string spectrum on the string side of the correspondence. And this is going to be the, this is going to provide the final confirmation for this Y system equations, if you want, that that Pedro wrote down. So what's the perturbative string expansion of the anomalous dimensions? Okay, now let me get the new blackboard. And let me write the plan on the top. Okay, good. Let me write it here. Okay, so okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to compute the the spectrum of massive strings where the energy goes like C0 times lambda to the 1/4 plus C1 plus C2 over lambda to the 1/4 plus blah, 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 blah. So the quantum, the strong coupling expansion of the energies is given in terms of lambda to the 1/4. And we see exactly where this comes from and why it is so. So what we're going to compute is the first three terms. Okay. So this is the one loop. This is the classical term. This is one loop correction to the anomalous dimensions. That's strong coupling. So the plan of the talk is the following. So we're going to use. Okay. We are going to use the string sigma model. So this is going to be a worksheet computation in the worksheet conformal field theory. So I'll tell you some quick, just remind you some quick basics about the string sigma model. Then we're going to pick a particular string configuration. What is this? So this is going to be, suppose this is ADS. So, and this is the time direction. This is like the radial direction. We're going to pick a string sitting in the center of ADS and just evolving with time, with like e to the iet. So this is really exactly the same as what you want to do. What you want to do in flat 10 dimension with a bosonic string, you have like the ground state is like a tachyon with some momentum. So this is exactly the same thing you would do. So then, what we'll do is we're going to quantize the theory. Quantize using the background field method, which is the standard way to quantize sigma models. Background field method. And our goal is going to be to compute the Virasoro constraint, the physical state condition for these strings. Okay, I can write here. So we're going to compute the Virasoro constraint applied on our particular vertex operator. So I compute t plus tr equals 0. So this is the physical state condition. This is just what you would do as usual in flat bosonic string, in flat phase. And we're going to do this at one loop in the sigma model perturbation theory. So we're going to do some loops on the worksheet. So not string loops, but Feynman diagrams on the worksheet. And by solving this, we're going to find the energy as a function of our lambda to the 1/4. And this is going to be our final result, which I already wrote it here. Okay, so this is going to be. Okay. So, well, E minus L. So this is going to be our final result at the end of the talk. And this is going to be the total conformal dimension of the operator. And the final result is going to be this, that from this we can read out the anomalous dimension, and the anomalous dimension is going to be 2 lambda to the 1/4 minus 4 plus 2 over lambda to the 1/4 plus higher loop, two loop corrections, which I'm not going to compute. And this is like in perfect agreement with the Y system computation by Pedro and collaborators. This is like 2 years ago. So in fact, this is the motivation that that we had to start this project. And it took us 2 years, but then at the end, we made it maybe 2 years too late. But okay. So that's what we did. Okay. So any questions about the motivations? If not, I'll just start with some details. It's awesome to have, like, all of these blackboards. Okay. So now I will spend, like, 5 minutes to remind you how the worksheet conformal field theory looks like when you have strings propagating in this type to be ADS5 and SS5 background. Okay, so let me start from here. Good. So now we start to look at the string side of the correspondence. So type to be superstring theory is a maximally supersymmetric background, which is ADS5 times S5 plus 32 fermions, and can be written as a super coset in which the numerator is the PSU22/4 supergroup, which is the global symmetry group of n equals 4 supremes, and the denominator is the Lorentz group of this particular background, which is also 1,4 times SO5. So this is a coset with 10 bosons and 32 fermions, and this is the type to be string theory background. So how does this work? Well, we have a group element, a coset representative, G, which depends on the worksheet coordinates, which I call sigma and tau. And this transforms in the following way under these groups. It's got a left global symmetry transformation by elements of PSU, which I call G naught. Then we have G of sigma and tau. And then a right transformation by the gauge part of the supercoset by function H of sigma and tau. So this is global, this is local, so this is PSU, and this is SO times SO. Or now, the matter part, so we have the matter part of the of the sigma model is given in terms of the Maurer-Cartan current. What do they look like? So they are left invariant currents, Maurer-Cartan currents. If you call J, they are G to the minus 1. G is coset represented. G to the minus 1 dG. Okay, so these are one forms on the worksheet. They're called the Maurer-Cartan currents because they satisfy the Maurer-Cartan equations. I'm not going to write them. And it turns out that this particular supergroup, PSU, emits a Z4 grading. Sorry, the Lie superalgebra admits a Z4 grading, and since these currents take value in the Lie superalgebra of PSU, we can split them according to the Z4 grading of the superalgebra. And I will call it J0 and J2, the even part, and J1 and J3, the odd part. So, J0 is going to be the gauge part. The gauge part is like SO1, 4 times SO5. So this is the gauge, and it contains 20 elements, which are the generators of the Lorentz group. This is going to be the 10 bosons. The J2 part is going to be the 10 bosons, which are the directions of the ADS5 times S5 space-time. And these are going to be the 32, J1 and J3 are going to be the 32 fermions of type 2B superstring. Okay, so this is the matter sector of the coset, of the worksheet theory. Now, I maybe keep this here. Actually, yes. So what's the ghost sector? Okay, so this theory has some ghosts. It's a quantum sigma model, so it's got some ghost structure. And the ghosts are target space spinors and are worksheet scalars. And those are what, those are called pure spinors. I'll show you why. So ghost sector, the ghost sector has okay. Let me call them L1 and L3, where 1 and 3 is the same as the 1 and 3 fermions in the matter sector. So we have a ghost for the J1 physical fermions and some ghosts for the J3 fermions. And they satisfy this constraint. L1 anti-commutator equals 0, and L3 anti-commutator equals 0. These are called the pure spinor constraints. But we're not going to use them at any point, so it doesn't really matter, just so you know. So this is the Berkowitz formalism for the ADS5 and S5 background. And this ghost sector has these fields and some conjugate momenta for these fields, which I will call W3 and W bar 1, where 1 and 3, it's again the Z4 grading of this conjugate momenta. So this is the ghost sector of the theory. Well, now we have everything. We have the matter sector. We have the ghost sector. We can write down the action. So there is an action for this theory, which is going to be the following. Okay, so this is... The action has a the coupling in front of the action is the square root of the gauge theory Toth coupling, because you know we are in a string sigma building a string sigma model, so the coupling of the string sigma model, sorry, the inverse coupling of the string sigma model is the radius of ADS. But I already canceled it. Doesn't matter. So we had this identification between the ADS CFT dictionary that tells me that the radius square in units of alpha prime is equal to the gauge theory Toth coupling, so that's what I already replaced in front of the action. So now you start to see why the quantum correction are going to be like lambda to the 1/4, because this is the inverse coupling, leaving an inverse coupling square. So the action is going to be integral in the 2z. The super trace, so I'm going to, okay, I'm not going to get into any details of the notation. I'm using the super, there's a bilinear form on this super Lie algebra, or PSU super Lie algebra, and that's why we are going to use the super trace notation. So this is like 1/2 J2 bar plus 3/4 J3 J1 bar plus 1/4 J1, J3 bar. So this is the mother part of the action that uses the mother sector. And then we have the ghost part, which is W3, nablavar L, the bar L1, plus W bar 1, del L bar 3. So you see, these are the ghost variables, minus something that I write as N, M bar, where N and M bar are the Lorentz generators. By Lorentz, I mean the SO 1.4 times SO5 generators acting in the pure spinner sector, in the ghost sector. So this is the coupling between the Lorentz generator in the ghost sector and the Riemann curvature of ADS5 and SS5. And this is the sigma model action that is going to be our starting point for quantization. So this theory comes equipped, this is a quantum theory, so it comes equipped with a BST charge and a Virzola constraint. So I can write it here. Okay, I can write it here. So this theory has a BST charge. It's going to be the integral in the sigma of the super trace of L1 J3 plus L3 bar J1 bar. You see these are the ghosts, L1 and L3 are the pure spinner ghosts, and J1 and J3 are the fermionic part of the mother sector, so this is the BST charge. And then we have a Virzola constraint, Virzola, which is the usual physical state condition, so this is going to be, let me write the TZZ part of the stress tensor. This is square root of lambda, super trace of one half J2 plus J3 J1 minus W3 del L1. Okay, so this is the ZZ part of the Virzola of the stress tensor. Okay. So you see it comes from the action. Here we have a Vestmino term and a kinetic term, so this comes only from the kinetic term part of the action for the fermions, and the same for the ghosts and the bosons. Okay, what's the spectrum of the theory? Well, spectrum of the theory is given by the... Okay, I'll write it here. Okay. So the spectrum is given by vertex operators, as usual. So we're going to do to have like like the usual. This is going to be like old-fashioned covariant quantization on the worksheet, just like Ulchinsky chapter 1, I guess. No, 3 maybe. So this the spectrum, the physical state, are ghost number 1, 1, ghost number 1, 1, vertex operators on the worksheet, and they are going to be in the BRST cohomology, and they're going to have T plus T bar equals 0. So this is the usual physical state, the physical states of the theory. So, okay, so let's take a look a second. What's known about this worksheet theory? Well, it's known that the massless sector of the theory consists of ghost number 1, 1 vertex operators, which are worksheet scalars. So there are zero forms on the worksheet. The massless sector describes the supergravity states. Just like in 10 dimension, if you take type to be supergravity, you compartify it on the sphere. This is like Kim, Roman, Spanier, and Oisen paper from 85. And this sugra on ADS5, MCS5. And this is described by the massive sector of this theory. Good. What we're going to be interested in, though, is the massive string spectrum. So what you would call massive, like in the bosonic string, is usually you take you add oscillators to the massive sector, and that's going to be your massive level expansion of the string. So massive state. Massive states. So let me be concrete now, and let me consider the ADS metric in global coordinates. So let's take the ADS metric, ADS in global coordinates. This is the S square equals minus cosh square rho the t square plus the rho square plus sinh square rho the s3 square. This is like three sphere. So this is the ADS metric in global coordinate. What we're going to do is we're going to consider, as I said before, a string with wave function into the IET, which is sitting still at the center of ADS. So what's the center of ADS? That's rho equals 0. So we take a string configuration at rho equals 0, so at the center of ADS, evolving as e to the IET, as I wrote there. So this is described by particular, so we have a supercosine sigma model, so we have to write a particular group element that describes this this string propagating. So the group element is the following. So let me call it G tilde, because it's the configuration around which we expand the classical configuration. So this is the exponent of minus tau. This is the worksheet time coordinate times e. This is a parameter that's going to be the energy, like very, very soon I'm going to show you. Times t, this is the anti-Hermitian generator of the time direction in PSU, divided by square root of lambda. Okay, so this is going to be our classical string configuration, which corresponds to this string. And we're going to expand now. What we're going to do now is we're going to take this action, the sigma model action that I wrote there, and expand it around in small fluctuations, the quantum fluctuations around this classical configuration. So this is a good classical configuration because it solves the equations of motion, and its classical diversity is charge is 0. So it's perfectly well defined. Okay, now, first, I'm not going to show you. I mean, you can show that this E is the value of the energy operator. You can compute the Naylor charges, and you can show that this E is actually really the value of the energy operator of the PSU global symmetry evaluated on this classical solution. So this which I call E for a reason, it's really the energy, which is the guy we have to solve for. Okay. So the first thing I wanna do is look at what's the Virzoro constraint corresponding to this classical solution. And I'm gonna write it. Okay, so you see this was point one and two. Now, still at point two, I'm gonna show you the Virzoro constraint. Okay. So this is easy. What we have to do? Well, we just have to evaluate this expression here for this classical string configuration. Okay, that's not too hard. So first of all, we'll compute the value of the Murray-Cartan forms, the classical Murray-Cartan forms expanded around this classical configuration. So we'll have a J tilde. Turns out that the only non-zero component is J tilde. This is a one form, so it has a tau and a sigma indices. Only J tilde in the tau direction is non-zero. And this is equal to, what was it equal to? Minus E times T, generated by the square root of lambda. And so from here, it's immediate to see that the Virzoro constraint computed on this classical string configuration. I want to write it here so I keep it. Okay. Well, T plus T bar. If we plug this guy here inside the expression for the philosophical constraint that I wrote there, what you get is minus E squared over 2 square root of lambda. Okay? So this is the classical part of the Virasoro constraint. And now you say, huh, now this is a problem because you see, we have to require zero Virasoro constraint, so this implies that the energy is zero. But, huh, no, this is not true because why? Because our massive string state, the massive string states have an energy that goes like lambda to the 1/4. So you see that here, the classical part is of order 1, and the quantum corrections are going to be the same order as the classical term, and so we're going to impose the Virasoro constraint to be zero at the quantum level, and that's how we find the energy of the string. Okay, that's like what you do in a bosonic string. Usually, you have a classical part of the Virasoro constraint. This would be what you call k squared or like m squared. And then you have the quantum corrections, then you set to zero the quantum Virasoro constraint, and you get the spectrum. So this is what you would do usually. So since E goes like lambda to the 1/4, we need the quantum corrections. Okay, good. Well, what we're gonna do in the rest of the talk is we're gonna compute the quantum corrections. Before I write down the quantum corrections, let me tell you in two words how to quantize this theory. So how does this background field method work? So it works like this. You just take a coset element. So now background method. So you take a coset element G, which is going to be G tilde, our classical coset element, times some fast moving variables, the quantum fluctuations, which are going to be x1 plus x2 plus x3, where 1, 2, 3 are the grading, with respect to the PSU superalgebra, because you see the fluctuations transform in the superalgebra. So these are going to be my quantum fluctuations, and this is going to be my classical solution. So in particular, you take this expression for the coset now, for the coset element, you plug it back in the Mariacartan form, and what you get is like the quantum. You get a classical term plus some quantum corrections. So let me rewrite here now what we get. We get the Mariacartan form, whose J sigma is given by e to the minus x, the sigma e to the x. And you know, now you have to expand it. And you can expand it at any order in fluctuations. And then you have a J tau, which is going to be e to the minus x, d tau minus the classical term that I just canceled. Or this is the generator in the time direction. So lambda e to the x. OK, so what we're going to do is we're going to take these expressions, by x, I mean x1 plus x2 plus x3. We're going to plug them now inside the action, which is this object S here. And we're going to just expand any order you see appropriate to do your quantum computation. In particular, if you expand it to quadratic order in the action, you find the spectrum of the small fluctuations. So what's the spectrum of the small fluctuations? You have 10 bosons and 32 fermions. Some of them are massive, some of them are massless. Or I can summarize the spectrum here. Bosons and fermions. Okay, so we're gonna have the bosons corresponding to the time directions. So the time direction is massless. And the same for the bosons corresponding to the S5 direction, that's also massless. But then the bosons corresponding to the coordinate rho and the 3 sphere direction, this is the same notation as in the metric of ADS that I wrote there in global coordinate, these are going to be massive. So these are going to be massive with some mass, which is, what is it? M equals E over square root of lambda. So this comes from looking at the quadratic term in the fluctuations in the action. So these are going to be the mass terms. And what about the fermions? Well, the fermions will have 16 massless fermions and 16 massive fermions with mass M equals E over 2 square root of lambda. Okay, so you see, well, I mean, there's no match because the background is non-BPS, so we don't expect any match in any case. Good. Now, you proceed with the canonical quantization. What is canonical quantization? You look at the equations of motion for the fluctuations coming from the action. You expand in mode, just like you do usually. You impose equal time commutation relations. You get the commutators for the commutation relations for the oscillators of the various fluctuations. And this is your quantum theory. Now, what we're going to look for is the quantum corrections here to the Virasoro constraint. So let me write down what these quantum corrections are. So now we are at point four. This is the final part of the talk in which I tell you what are the quantum corrections. So I can actually summarize it here before I go into details. There are three kinds of quantum corrections. And they are the following. So quantum correction So the first kind of quantum correction. No. We'll
show you like they enter in from the top. Small question. How do you identify the classical region? It's detailed and cross-fault of Panisci. How did you identify the classical genus cross-fault of Panisci?
Yes, I haven't told you yet. It comes, like, if you are, like, patient 5 minutes, I'll show you how we are kind of sure that this is the Konishi. So the Konishi is not going to be this. This is the vacuum. The Konishi is going to be an excitation over this vacuum. So particular vertex operators whose quantum numbers are the same as some guy in the Konishi magnitude. So I'm going to show you, like, in 1 second. Yes.
Does this correspond to a BPS operator with the same out of charge as the Konishi?
No. This is just the vacuum. This is like the vacuum in the design. So I have to take a particular vertex operator, and this vertex operator is a string state, and the string state will match with the quantum numbers of the Konishi operator. So I'll show you that in a minute. Okay, so what are the three quantum corrections? So the first quantum correction comes from the normal ordering. The normal ordering is like the quadratic part of the stress tensor. Okay, this is what you have in bosonic string. That's all you have. In bosonic string, you only have the normal ordering part and the anything. However, now this is like a more complicated. So the second quantum correction is the two magnon excitation. This you also have in the bosonic string. Two magnon excitation. Magnon energy, if you want. Why two magnons? Well, I haven't told you yet, but that's because our Konishi operator will correspond to a two magnon impurity in the signal model. So this is also a quantum correction. And then the third quantum correction, which is the tricky part, is the quartic correction. So the quartic correction, I'll show you at the end, will correspond to terms with four quantum fluctuations. So you see, we start with two quantum fluctuations, and that's the normal order. And then you have some terms, but then you can go up in the order, and then you see that the next quantum correction comes from terms with four quantum fluctuations that you have to take care of. So these are going to be the three quantum corrections. So let me start from the first. So I didn't tell you what the vertex operator is yet, because we don't need it. So let's look at the central charge, the normal ordering part. Well, this is very easy. what's the normal ordering? You just look at your all your path. I just cancelled what I needed. What we need to compute the normal ordering is the spectrum. So we look at the spectrum of our fluctuations, the bosons and the fermions, and we just, just like what you would do usually, you just sum over all the frequency of oscillation of the frequency of all the modes, and that's your normal ordering contribution. What is it? So let me call it P plus P bar normal ordering. Okay, we just read off from here. So there is a zero mode part, which is 2p over square root of lambda, that comes from the zero modes of the bosons. And then we have the oscillating part. So the zero modes of the fermion don't contribute, and we have the oscillating part, the sum from 1 to infinity of now. Well, we just read off from the spectrum. We have the bosons. We have 6 massless bosons and 4 massive bosons. So let's add them. So this is sum over all of them. So we have 6 square root of n squared. These are the massless bosons plus 4 square root of n squared plus what's the mass? The mass is e over square root of lambda. So e over square root of lambda squared. Then we have the fermions. So we have 16 massless fermions. And then we have 16 massive fermions with this mass. So minus 16 square root of n squared plus e over 2 square root of lambda squared. And then finally we have the ghosts. So what are the ghosts? The ghosts are the pure spinors. And these are they're bosons. And there are 22 of them. 22 real degrees of freedom. This takes a while. This is, the usual pure spinor formalism. So, takes a while to show. But if you solve the pure spinor constraint, you find that out of 16 spinor components, only 11 are independent degrees of freedom. So that's why, and they are massless in this background. So, so this is our expression for the normal ordering. Now, what are we going to do with it? Well, we already know that the energy goes like lambda to the 1 power. So we can simplify this, and we can only evaluate it only the leading terms in the limit in which e over square root of lambda is very small, because e goes like lambda to the 1/4. So when we do that, what we find is that this is equal to, there's like 3 over square root of lambda minus 3 over 16, this is theta of 3 e over square root lambda to the 4th, plus blah, 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 blah. And what we need actually for at this level, like the one loop level, we only need the first part. This is going to contribute to 2 loops and higher, so we only keep this. So this is the result for the normal ordering, and now I'm going to just edit there. So let me edit here. So we have plus 2 e over square root of lambda, but we can recombine this in a nicer form, which is e times e to the minus 4. Okay, so this is the classical part plus the normal ordering part. Okay, good. Next term. Now I have to tell you what is the vertex operator we are considering. Okay, so we're considering a vertex operator at the first massive level of the superstring. That's what is supposed to be the Konishi, where the Konishi multiple is supposed to be. And, let me think for a second. I can write it here. Now, this is, it has to be a ghost, an operator at ghost number 1, 1, because that's the physical state cohomology. Okay. So, ghost number 1, 1, as you already said. And now, let me tell you what this is. So, at ghost number 1, 1, there is a particular vertex operator in the cohomology, which is called the radius changing operator. So, if I take the supertrace of L1, L3 bar, this operator is in the cohomology, and this describes this operator describes a change in the radius of ADS. So, this is called the radius changing operator. How do I know that it's in the cohomology? because you know you have a descent procedure from ghost number 1-1 vertex operator to integrated vertex operator, which are the deformations of the action. And it turns out that the integrated vertex operator corresponding to the action in its unintegrated form is precisely this operator. So if you apply two BST transformations to the action, you find this operator. So this means that since the action couples to the radius, this operator corresponds to the change of the radius radius. So this is why I called it the radius changing operator. So the radius changing operators corresponds couples to the Young-Mills coupling, which means that this corresponds to the Young-Mills Lagrangian in the dual n equals 4 supremials theory, because the name means the Lagrangian has in the front 1 over j Young-Mills square. So this corresponds, say, to in the n equals 4 theory to f mu. Okay, so to the super Young-Mills Lagrangian. And then this, we know that this has delta equals 4. Okay, so the conformal dimension of the Young-Mills Lagrangian should work good. But this is not an operator in the Gunichi multiple. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna take this vertex operator and add two Magnon excitation with the non-zero mode oscillators. So our vertex operator. So this is just okay. Just to keep in mind, I'm not going to use this. So the vertex operator we are going to consider is the following. So I take some x, the minus one oscillator, so the first massive oscillator, in some direction that I call space com direction that I'll tell you now what it is. So x, the plus direction is the following. So x plus is x1 plus I x2. So, and then I take, this is like the left moving one. Sorry, let me write. This is like the left movers, what you would call the left movers. This is what you would call the right mover. And this is also minus one. So this is like level matching. And then we have this part, super trace of lambda one, lambda bar three. And this acts on the vacuum, our ground state with energy E. So this is the vertex operator that we are going to consider. So let's look at the quantum numbers of this vertex operator. So the quantum numbers of this vertex operator, no, I don't need the action anymore, I think. No, I don't need the action. Cancel. So the quantum numbers of these vertex operators are, well, it has a Lorentz spin. The Lorentz spin is 1-1. Lorentz spin. You can just read it immediately off this two oscillator. Lorentz spin. 1,1. It's an SU4 singlet. There's no R charge here because these are like, this is an SU4 singlet and this is like only in the ADS direction. So it's SU4 singlet. Good. And then, look, this is delta equals 4 and we are adding two oscillators in the X direction. So this is delta 0, what you would call in the engineering dimension, equals 6. So these are the quantum numbers of the vertex operator we're considering. And it turns out that there is an operator in the Konishi multiplet which has precisely these quantum numbers. Okay. So this corresponds to a particular operator in the Konishi multiplet. So this doesn't correspond to trace of phi phi I. However, you know that all of the operators in the Konishi multiplet have the same anomalous dimension. So since we are interested in computing the anomalous dimension of the Konishi multiplet, we can just pick our favorite state in the multiplet and compute the anomalous dimension on that. Why? Because it turns out that this particular vertex operator is really, really simplifies the computation dramatically, which is the next thing I'm going to tell you. And that's why we chose it, because it's really, really simple to do the computation with this vertex operator. It doesn't matter which one you choose, as long as you choose one. And all of them is the same on all the dimensions. So what's the idea now is that we're going to consider the point 2 and 3 quantum corrections. And now, using this particular vertex operator, which is the first massive level of the string. I haven't told you before that if you look at the normal ordering contribution, it's actually easy to check that if you take E equals 0, So like empty ADS, so you have just the string signal in empty ADS. This has zero central charge because you see this is zero. And then if you sum, you get zero here. So that's a check that our string theory has zero central charge because it's very important. So, you know. But when E is non-zero, you have a string in the background, so we are expanding around the background, so the central charge is in general non-zero. Okay. Now, the next quantum correction, now that we know which vertex operator we are considering, you know, each oscillator has a particular energy. This oscillator this vertex operator has two magnons. But we know what the energy of those two magnons is. Well, it's 1 plus E over square root of lambda square, because these are like the first oscillator, so N equals 1. So we can just add this contribution to our Hamiltonian. So this is going to be this term here, the next term in the quantum corrections. So we have times plus 2, because we have two oscillators, square root of 1 plus E over square root of lambda square. Okay, good. Yes?
The operator of the BPS operator that has the same charges as the condition.
Okay, in that case, you know that the BPS operators have E equal J, right? So for instance, okay, this is a paper that's going to be out very soon by Breno.
So for your own, you're only talking about classical dimension. Classical dimension, they are degenerate.
Hmm?
The level of the classical dimension.
Yes.
Before.
Yes.
Okay, this is tricky.
I don't think there's an operator with these kind of numbers in the BPS sample. I don't think there is because this is SU4. Okay, I see. This might be a descendant. That's what they said.
Like a tweak up in this one.
Well, I don't have the table in my head, but yeah, we can take a look. So, there's my collaborator Breno is now finishing another paper in which he is doing the same procedure that I told you here, but for the BPS spectrum. So he's going to write down. You see, for the BPS sector, all the operators like the current parameters are like E equal J. So you have to expand around the different classical solution that has both an energy and some angular momentum, and then you just quantize it, and you show, and in this way, you can compute, the near the BMN states, if you want. So this is going to appear at some point soon by Breno and his students, and it's going to have many, many more examples. I mean, at least that's what he told me, so okay, this is on record. So. Okay. Okay. Sorry, Breno. Okay. Okay. So now we have classical part, magnon correction, and then the next part is the quartic correction. So this is kind of really really complicated because now you have to compute the quartic terms in the fluctuation expansion of the stress tensor and see how they act on our vertex operator. So, well, you can use Mathematica. In fact, Pedro taught me how to do this, to expand the operator in fluctuations. And then you can just get all of your terms and see what happens. This is no problem. And it turns out that if you do it, the quartic corrections, let me write this here. Okay, in T plus T bar, at quartic, say, with four fluctuations. There's only one term that contributes. So the tricky point is that a generic operator here will mix with all of the other operators now, because a quartic term here can mix this guy with other guys with fermions, other guys with bosons. So in general, you have to diagonalize this this is like a diagonalization problem. However, it turns out that this particular operator is very, very nice, because it doesn't mix with any other operator. And there is only one correction coming from the quartic part of the stress tensor, and this is going to just be proportional to the operator itself. So this is why we like very much this operator, and this is like a clever choice. But if you want to solve the problem in general, you'll have like some diagonalization problem with all the possible operators, and you act and you compute the eigenstate, blah, 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 blah. So, okay, story short, this is the quartic correction that that renormalizes this operator, so P2x2 minus the sigma x2 square. If you just act, you find that if you act with this guy on this vertex operator, namely if you compute p plus t bar acting on, let's call it d, this vertex operator, this is going to be proportional to minus 2 over square root of lambda p. So this is the last term we needed, and let's add it here. So this is the quartic coupling. Okay, well, now we're kind of done, because we just imposed that this is zero. Now you solve this equation, and the result is, will delta zero equal 6, which is the guy that that we argued there, we find that the solution to this is E equals, okay, well, okay. You see, E minus delta 0 equals 2 lambda to the 1/4 minus 4 plus 2 over lambda to the 1/4. So this is the energy corresponding to this particular vertex operator that we argued is a member of the Konishi multiplet. Okay, end of the computation. Let me just end the seminar with some open problems now, or like directions that to go to compute stuff in the future. Well, now, you know, this is like a new way to compute the spectrum of the string in ADS5 and CS5, so now you can generate the whole industry, if you want, of spectrum of any operators. You pick your favorite and you compute it. So this is like completely, you know, this is like a completely algorithmic computation, so you can just do it. There's no subtlety, no tricks. And so, in principle, so what can you compute? Well, I mean, you can compute like higher loop corrections here. You need just for, if you want, you can compute the two loop corrections to the Virasoro constraint and just get the next term in the expansion and so on and so forth. You can just do any loop expansion. There's no problem for any vertex operator you like. So, it's no problem. And also, what, okay, so what else can you do? Well, in principle, I mean, this allows you to compute the full spectrum of strings in ADS5 and CS5. But notice that at no point in the computation I use integrability. On the other hand, we know that integrability is like a super powerful tool to solve for the spectrum. And in fact, there was a paper, for instance, by Ashok, Proust, and Beniku, where they use they kind of start to study integrability for these Berkowitz sigma models. And I'm sure I didn't do anything with integrability, but I'm sure that if you can use integrability here, it's going to be like a blast. I mean, you can just solve for the spectrum, I'm sure, at all values of the coupling. So this in particular, this is the first step to kind of try to derive the Y system that Pedro wrote down from first principle from the strange sigma model, so a strong coupling. So this is a way, if you know how to use integrability, also Mikhailov and Shafranameki wrote some papers, they computed the R matrix for the sigma model, they showed that it satisfies kind of a Young-Baxter equation, but not quite, and there's all fusion rules, blah, blah, blah. So in this way, this is a way to just derive from the few spinors the Y system. And then, of course, the holy grail here is that once you have vertex operators, why don't we scatter them? So the next step is like, let's compute scattering amplitudes. For instance, you can take three Konishi operators, you stick them on the worksheet, and you compute the scattering amplitude of three Konishi operators. So there's a prescription to compute scattering amplitudes in this sigma model that Berkowitz wrote down a few years ago. You can just start a whole new story here with the scattering amplitudes that's strong. Okay, thanks.
Question. When do you think that pure spinner will be important? In the sense that other papers got the same result without pure spinner. Is it really important to use pure spinner?
Yeah, I mean, the only part of the pure spinner method here is like to check the central charge is zero.
Yeah, but then if you would not have pure spinner, you would have less smaller number of fermions, right? So it would just mean that instead of minus 16, you would subtract minus 4.
No. So this is the bosonic part, this is the fermionic part, and this is the pure spinner part. So
it is just regulating, right?
Yeah, so at this point, I never use the pure spinner, the pure spinner component in theory in any way. So it's just not used here. Well, I mean, I kind of put it under the carpet because I use the fact that this corresponds to the radius changing operator. You see, we have to construct vertex operators with Gauss number 1-1. So it means that the vertex operators will have the pure spinners inside because those are the Gauss. But I never really use the pure spinner constraint in the computation. Like, I mean, I used it here to prove this part, but I didn't tell you.
Even for the quantic part?
For the quantic part, no. This is the only term that renormalizes this thing. But I'm sure, 100% sure, that if you want to compute the two-loop correction now, you're going to have to take care of the pure spinners seriously.
So then you think that if Arkady will do his computation at two loops, it will fail?
If Arkady will do the computation at two loops, well, what do I know? I haven't told you that there's other two collaborations that got the same result from the worksheet. Sorry if I didn't mention them. One is Arkady Seidling and Neumann, and the other one is Kollegramov and collaborators. But what they did is they used the Seidling used the Green-Schwarz sigma model in the light language, and Kollegramov used the algebraic curve. So my feeling, but I can't prove it, is that the algebraic curve only works at one loop for small fluctuations, and since that's the Green-Schwarz and the light cone.
Right. No, they are equivalent.
So that's gonna be like a one loop. At one loop, you can use it, no problem. But I don't think you can use it at two loops. In fact, there's something funny with this other Green-Schwarz computation is that. The way you do the computation is you do the computation of the spectrum in the sector of very large strings, and then you take a limit for very, very small quantum numbers. Okay, the limit is smooth, but it's kind of tricky here because you see that you start from strings that have very large quantum numbers in which E goes like square root of lambda, and the spin goes like square root of lambda, j goes like square root of lambda. And then you take a limit, it's kind of, you're exchanging orders of limit all around the place, so, I mean, it works perfectly, maybe there's gonna be subtlety or something. So I think this thing is completely general, works at any loops. But I have the feeling that their computation works only one loop, but, I mean, maybe not, maybe, I don't know. I think that Seidling did some two-loop computations,
and for semi-classical strings,
for semi-classical strings,
so like the refining.
The problem is that the Green-Schwarz, if you expand around MKDS over very tiny strings like this, it's kind of tricky to fix the light language. You can really do it, so you have to take limits from large strings. So
how easy is it to compute correlation functions now with this vertex operator? Is it really straightforward?
So I didn't do it, but I can tell you one thing about it. It's like a regular correlation function computation in which you have there's a zero mode part and a non-zero mode part. So you have to take three unintegrated vertex operators, just as you do all the time. So you take your amplitude for a function, K1, K2, K3, whatever. This is going to be some V1, V2, but V of 1, V of 0, V of infinity if you want. Let's say you take three commissions, three of those. You stick it here. You do the little thing with the non-zero modes, and then the point is that this is you have to evaluate the zero mode part. The zero mode part is an integral over the pure spinner manifold and the thetas and the zero modes of the theta and the axis. So there is a prescription for that. It's been written down by Berkowitz, which is something like V11 lambda, L modulus square, and then integral in D32 thetas, and then integral in D10 axis of what's left after doing the conformal theory contractions here. So this is the prescription at three level. This is string three level. In principle, it's totally well defined. You just plug it and do it. Except that I never done this integral in the two spinners. You know, you have now, this is an integral over these variables. I mean, but you want to sit down and look. I just never done it, but so, and this prescription is actually, so in another paper with Nathan, we checked that this is consistent at any loops, string loops now, so I mean higher-genus Riemann surfaces, so this can be extended with no problems to any higher loops, so it's perfectly well-defined. This is, in fact, like a topological string prescription. But, I mean, it's a little bubble. One can just sit down and start to compute. I just never done that. In flat space, I mean, there's like, you know, Carlos Mafra and all of these collaborators, they have like any number of legs, any loop, like up to not two loops so far, but it's totally straightforward once you understand the rules of the game. You can put it on mathematics and just. I think it's straightforward, and I didn't compute it. So, might be solved. Let's take a quick look.